Ooh, you want to play psycho killer? Can I be the helpless victim?
Cross your eyes and scream, man. Scream for your life!
Welcome. I'm your scream queen, Jenica Olin. This is my third episode, and it's coming out on Thanksgiving. So if you are hanging out with your family, hopefully they aren't anything like the one I'm about to cover today. We are all new here, so I will tell you a little bit about what you're listening in on. My objective for this podcast is to delve into the themes of horror, both real and imagined. Each episode will cover one movie in depth based on a theme of the month. This month's theme is all about family, and we have some killer families in the horror genre. The slogan I am using is a family that slays together, stays together, and these families take that to heart. I host a horror event each month at Conduit in Orlando, Florida. My intentions are to get all the horror nerds out in the open and create an opportunity for community. I swear, not in a cult way. We don't need cons and other large events to enjoy our common interest in all things horror. The movies I cover each month at my events will also be what I cover on this podcast. So if you plan on attending any of my events, this is a good place to get a leg up on everyone else for the trivia portion of the night. My next horror event at Conduit in Orlando, Florida is on December 16th. I will be covering the 1974 cult classic Black Christmas, directed by Bob Clark. I will also cover the 2006 remake of Black Christmas, directed by Glenn Morgan, and the 2019 remake, directed by Sophia Decal. There is also going to be a macabre market at Conduit on Sunday, December 15th. It's called Market of the Beast, and it will feature all kinds of gifts for your morbid loved ones. At the market, I will be running a photo spot where you can take pictures with the cosplay of Art the Clown as a cosplay of Santa. I will be creating a reenactment of the Santa scene in Terrifier 3, where you can get your Christmas pictures just in time for the holidays. A quick layout of this podcast. My episode will have an intro, brief synopsis of the movie, an analysis of the film, and then I get into the true crime of it all. I'm a huge true crime fan, and I like to make connections between the true horrors that inspire our darkest imaginations. The truth is, the stuff on screen is way tamer than the true horrors that take place every day. In today's episode, I will be delving into the demons of the Devil's Rejects, written, produced, and directed by Rob Zombie, starring Sid Haig, Bill Moseley, and Sherry Moon Zombie. Let's set the scene with a synopsis of the movie.
I am standing outside the perimeter of what is turning out to be the most horrific crime scene since Jack the Ripper stalked the streets of London. What police have uncovered reads like this. Words can't describe it. Human skulls used as ornaments. Body parts stuffed in refrigerators. And I can't believe what it says here. A mass grave of decomposing bodies dumped under the crawl space of the house.
The Devil's Rejects.
On May 18th, 1978, Texas Sheriff John Quincy Wydell, in a large posse of state troopers, issues a search and destroy mission on the Firefly family, who are responsible for over 75 homicides and disappearances over the past several years. Officer Ray Dobson asks Sheriff Wydell if he thinks they will die today. Wydell tells him, "Dying ain't an option." He pumps his shotgun and gets ready to talk through a speaker box. The Firefly family are all awakened when Wydell orders them to come out peacefully because the police have the house surrounded. Otis and Rufus position themselves at the front of the house while Mother Firefly and Baby position themselves in the back by the kitchen.
Completely surrounded! You have no chance!
Captain Carter, for 45 pigs!
I know! Shit, fuck!
Where the fuck is Tiny?
I ain't seen Tiny.
Tiny! Oh, I think he went out last night!
Look, everybody, shut up!
Oh,
Michael, what's the matter?
I keep thinking about old times. Like when you was a fucking baby. You know, you look like an angel.
I know, Ma. You told me that a million times.
Yeah.
Gentlemen! On the count of three!
Ready?
One!
I love you, Mama.
I love you, baby.
Two!
Baby and Mother Firefly say, "I love you," as they put on their metal masks. Otis dons his metal mask, which has a skull painted on it, and readies to fire on the police. Wydell and the cops open fire on the Firefly household. The family members inside take cover and then return fire. Eventually, Wydell orders the officers to cease fire and throw in tear gas. Wydell kicks in the door to the gas-filled house and is followed by all the officers. Otis, Baby, and Mother Firefly make their way to the kitchen entrance while the police unload their guns into Rufus's body armor. Mother Firefly sees that her son is dead and goes to his side while Baby and Otis go through the secret tunnel in the house. Wydell orders Mother Firefly to drop her gun, but she points it at her own head and says, "You'll never get me." She pulls the trigger, but the gun is out of bullets. Captain Spaulding is pissed and worried when he sees a news clip showing the raid on the Fireflies, who the media has dubbed the Devil's Rejects. When Baby calls Spaulding, we realize he's her father. Baby explains what happened, and they agree to meet at the motel they're supposed to meet at in case of an emergency. Back at the police station, Wydell and several officers interrogate Mother Firefly about the whereabouts of the other family members. He shows her notebooks and pictures of her victims, but she is unmoved. Mother Firefly then gets some pictures from a notebook and says that she never knew exactly where to put them. She shows the photos to Wydell, and they turn out to be his dead brother. Wydell loses it and backhands her. He grabs her throat and says, "I'm going to kill you and your whole family." Meanwhile, we cut to a ranch, which is called Charlie's Frontier Funtown, a brothel, which is run by Charlie Altamont. The phone rings, and it's Spaulding calling from a payphone. We find out Charlie and Spaulding, who gives him a rundown of the situation, are adopted brothers. Charlie doesn't want the Fireflies coming to his place, but Spaulding's response is to hang up the phone. Otis and Baby arrive at the agreed-upon motel, but Spaulding's not there yet. Baby looks around and comes across a traveling band called Banjo and Sullivan. The Banjos and Gloria get settled in room 2, while Ray and Jimmy go out to get ice. Roy is alone filling up an ice bucket when Baby runs into him. Baby flirts with Roy, who obviously likes it.
I bet all the girls want to fuck you.
Would you say that again?
I bet all the girls want to fuck you.
Do you kiss your mama with that mouth?
Trust me, fella, that ain't the only thing I do with this mouth.
Don't tell me that. Get some what? Say that again.
That ain't the only thing I do with this mouth.
Baby asks to go to his room so they can have some fun. Roy says that he can't, as his wife is in the room. Baby then tells him to take her to his room or else her half-brother will kill him. Otis appears with his gun in hand, and they all proceed to walk to room 2. When Adam hears a knock at the door, he opens the door and Otis shoves him onto the bed. Otis orders everyone to stay cool and be quiet. When there's a knock at the door, Baby answers the door and lets Jimmy, their roadie, in. She shoves him onto the floor and Otis shoots him in the forehead, killing him instantly. Meanwhile, Spaulding's red truck runs out of gas when he spots a woman and her young boy coming out of a convenience store nearby. He approaches them and tells them that he needs to take their car on account of top secret clown business. The woman refuses to give him her keys and tells her son to get in the car. Spalding punches her in her face and orders the little boy out of the car.
Mom, a clown.
Yeah, clown. Oh, hi.
Hi. I'm going to have to be taking your car today. See, I have some top secret clown business that supersedes any plans that you might have for this here vehicle.
What's that about clown business?
Do I stutter, bitch?
Jamie, get in the car. Lock the door.
Who the hell?
Back at the motel, Otis terrorizes and assaults Roy Sullivan's wife, Gloria, and demands Adam, Banjo, and Roy come with him on an errand. Otis has Adam drive to the desert. Once they reach their destination, Otis orders Roy and Adam out of the van. Adam wants to know exactly where he is taking them. Otis honestly tells them that they are going to dig up a crate of weapons that he buried some time ago, and then implies that he's going to kill them afterwards. Adam and Roy attack Otis with a piece of wood, but he's able to overpower them. He shows them what happens to men when they try to be heroes. Otis grabs a piece of wood and smashes Roy's skull, killing him. He then walks over to Adam, telling him that he has something else planned for him. Otis begins to slash up Adam's face with his knife.
I'll show you, badass!
Hoss, I want you to pray to your God. I want you to pray that he comes and saves you.
I want lightning to come down and crash upon my fucking head.
Jesus.
Louder!
Bless the bunnies. Bless the little birds. Bless
I don't feel anything.
Bless the springtime morning.
Oh. I feel it. Oh, great God Almighty, I repent. Oh, I feel the love of the God Almighty. Oh, the Holy Spirit is in my body.
I am the devil, and I am here to do the devil's work.
At the motel, Adam's wife, Wendy, tries to escape through the bathroom window. When Gloria attempts to rebel, Baby kills her.
Why would you want to kill me? I'm your only hope. My brother's fucking crazy. You've seen him.
Wendy, it's all right.
Wendy runs out of the motel but is caught by Captain Spaulding, who knocks her unconscious. Otis returns and all three leave the motel together in the band's van. The motel maid comes to clean the room and discovers the murder scene. The maid enters the bathroom where she sees the devil's rejects written on the wall in blood. She's startled by Wendy, who has been propped up and displayed wearing her husband's skinned face as a mask. As Wendy runs out of the room, she's accidentally killed as she darts out into the highway seeking help and in shock. Sheriff Wydell and the police are called to the scene, feeling the pressure to find these sick fucks. Wydell calls a pair of amoral bounty hunters, the Unholy Two, Rondo and Billy Ray, to help him find the Fireflies. Back at the police station, as the police search the police records, they come to a realization that the Firefly family names are taken from the characters in the movies of Groucho Marx and the Marx Brothers. Wydell then gets a call from the Unholy Two, who tell him they have discovered Charlie Altamont uses a Groucho character name as an alias. Wydell figures out the Fireflies are heading to Charlie's place. As Otis drives Spaulding and Baby in the stolen van, Spaulding tells him to drive to Charlie's brothel. Baby sees a sign for ice cream and wants Otis to stop. Spaulding and Baby proceed to annoy Otis by chanting they want Tutti fucking Frutti. Otis tells them there's no ice cream in your future. In the next scene, Baby offers Otis some of her ice cream, but he refuses.
I'm starving.
Can't eat this.
What is your fucking problem? I'm in and out in 2 seconds.
You know, I think I'm gonna get me some Tutti fucking Frutti.
Tutti fucking Frutti, that sounds good.
Tootie fucking fruity!
Shut up!
Tootie fucking fruity!
Listen, there is no fucking ice cream in your fucking future!
Meanwhile, Wydell is at the Firefly house. As he goes through the basement, he starts to have hallucinations. He hears his dead brother George, who tells him, this is his home now. He doesn't have a choice in the matter, and he's stuck there until the Fireflies die. George urges Wydell to step over the line and kill all of them for him. Wydell suddenly wakes up and realizes it was a dream. Later that night, he goes to visit Mother Firefly in the jailhouse. Mother Firefly taunts Wydell, and in response, he stabs her to death. That evening, Otis, Baby, and Spaulding arrive at Charlie's Frontier Funtown.
Fuck off!
Listen here, shitheel. You tell that fucking dick his fucking brother's out here, and if he makes me wait any longer, I'm gonna go in there and whoop his ass. And yours, too.
Bubba, over.
Come on, baby.
Bubba, over.
What? What?
I got some guy out here making claim that he's your kin. I don't see no resemblance.
Yeah? Ask him where the sun don't shine. In sweet Molly Magnolia McGee's big, fat, juicy, marshmallow-covered ass. Yeah, that's him.
They proceed to party and get drunk with Charlie's prostitutes, while at the same time, Wydell has gone completely berserk and is talking to himself in the mirror. The next morning, Charlie and Clevon leave to get chickens for dinner. When heading back, Wydell is blocking the road with his truck. He orders Charlie to keep Spaulding and the two others preoccupied at his place until midnight. If he refuses, Charlie will be killed. Wydell meets up with the Unholy Two and tells them the Fireflies will be at Charlie's place at midnight. He warns them not to mess up tonight and explains that he doesn't care what condition the Fireflies are in, but he wants them alive enough to feel the same pain their victims felt. Billy Ray Snapper scratches the record and Otis realizes they've been caught. Rondo orders Baby at gunpoint to get up and Baby goes to get clothes. Wydell arrives where Spaulding is hiding and throws back a shot of liquor before surprising the clown. Spaulding insults him and his brother, so Wydell shoots Spaulding in the belly.
My brother! I've been looking for you, clown. Start the killing. You best start it right here. Make sure I'm all the way dead. I will come back and make you my bitch.
The Fireflies then discover Charlie betrayed them. Wydell herds Spaulding, Otis, and Baby into the back of the police truck and takes them to the Firefly house. The three killers sit tied to chairs in the basement, listening to Wydell talk about how his family has always been demon slayers. Wydell staples the pictures of their victims to each of their bodies. After torturing Baby, Otis, and Spaulding, Wydell unties Baby and tells her to run. He then splashes gasoline all over the floor and lights it on fire, leaving Otis and Spaulding to burn to death. Baby runs through cattle cages as Wydell chases her around the farm. As Baby tries to flee in Charlie's car, she's caught and Wydell begins to choke her to death with his bare hands. A figure suddenly appears behind Wydell and lifts him off the ground. It's Tiny, who breaks his neck. Baby tells Tiny to save the others from the burning house. In the front seat of Charlie's car, Otis gets behind the wheel, with baby and Spalding in the back seat. As they drive away, we see Tiny slowly walking into the burning house, which proceeds to blow up with Tiny inside. As dawn breaks, Otis is driving through the desert mountains with baby and Spalding asleep in the back seat. We see just further ahead on the road is a huge police blockade. Otis wakes up Spalding and baby in the back seat. With guns ready, Otis speeds towards the police as they start firing their guns. In their final act of demented glory, the Fireflies ram their car into the blockade, and they are met with a hailstorm of police bullets. All right, so now it's time to talk horror, and my guest today is Rob. How do you say your last name?
Whited.
Whited?
Yeah.
So Rob has, he just opened a printing company, and he's part of the Conduit family. Is there anything you're working on that you would like to share with my minuscule reach?
Hopefully lots of cool prints soon. I mean, it would be cool to do, like, horror-themed stuff, whether it's for, like, the podcast or trivia nights or whatever.
That's eventually, like, getting merch is eventually on my list of things to do once it seems, I don't know, like, something people would want.
Right.
But yes, you'll definitely be my go-to. What is the name? Can you tell everyone the name of your company?
The company is called Raw Power Printing. So it's a brand new upstart company. It's basically just me doing everything.
Yes. And you will be very busy very soon.
Yes.
I'm sure. All right. So we are talking about Rob Zombie's The Devil's Rejects. I watched it. You were at my trivia night. Thank you for being there.
It was awesome.
And thanks. And I know you just rewatched it. What are your thoughts rewatching it?
I think rewatching it, I had to in my head compare it to House of a Thousand Corpses because I've seen both lots of times.
Yeah.
But I think it's been a little while since I've rewatched either one.
Mm-hmm.
So in my head, this last time I was kind of going through like how is this one thematically different? You know?
Mm-hmm.
How does it resolve differently, like mood-wise, than like House of a Thousand Corpses did?
Yeah. I think it's very different. There is more of a storyline, I think. In The Devil's Rejects, like, you find out that Spalding is baby's dad.
Right.
And I feel like their relationship, like, you knew that they were a unit of some sort, but it wasn't spelled out for you exactly.
Right.
What those relationships were. And I felt like you got to actually know the characters in The Devil's Rejects, whereas House of a Thousand Corpses was more shock based.
For sure. Like House of a Thousand Corpses, you're kind of like watching this family like revel in their own like sadism.
Yeah.
But in Devil's Rejects, you get a little bit of a glimpse into like how they are as a family unit and how they care about each other and what their relationships are like.
I really like the look of this film. It's like that gritty 1970s, like, grindhouse horror aesthetic. And it was inspired by Texas Chainsaw and The Hills Have Eyes, which I also covered this month. So it's an exploitation movie. The Devil's Rejects does pick up where House of a Thousand Corpses leaves off. And there's, like, the connection between Sheriff George Wydell and his brother that was killed. Well, no, George Wydell was killed, and John Wydell is the new sheriff, the little brother. And he's raiding the Firefly family. But I don't think at this point in the beginning of the movie that he knows that they killed his brother.
No. I'm kind of confused about that too. Like, even after like a rewatch, is like, he knows his brother is dead. And
yeah,
presumably he knows that it had something to do with it, but maybe he doesn't know until like Mama Firefly like reveals to him that like they tortured and killed him.
Yeah, like that was like his confirmation. Like, I think he suspected it, but he didn't know for sure.
Because I think the way he reacts to that, it's almost like, yeah, like he didn't know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
He's a really interesting character, and one of those themes of like good versus evil, and like when you take something too far.
Right.
And you cross the line. So I think that's one of those storytelling abilities that Rob Zombie kind of got it right with this character.
I think I think he did a cooler, more nuanced like thing in Devil's Rejects with like making you kind of struggle with like who's the worst bad guy here, because we're following the killers of the previous movie as the main characters in this movie.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so they're obviously bad people, but then you figure out pretty quickly that like Sheriff Wydell is maybe worse, you know?
Like, yeah. And, you know, they both have like a family history. You find out later with Wydell that he has a family history of like, yeah, he talks about how his family's always been demon slayers. I thought that was a good line.
Yeah. Do you have in your notes who he mentions a guy by name? And I actually looked it up on Wikipedia. I can't remember the name of the dude he mentions, but he was an old real life, like, Old West like law man who turned vigilante.
Oh.
And he was not a good dude.
Oh.
Like,
I have to look that up.
He might have been like a legit lawman for a while, but
yeah,
he ended up being convicted of murder for murdering like a teenage kid or something.
That's fucked up.
And yeah, like he was not a good guy at all. So the fact that he was like, whoa, back in the days of so and so, it's like he's making a reference to like some really awful guy who is real, you know?
That's, you know, there are some references in here that you wouldn't expect. And I'll have to look into that. I didn't even think to look into the person that he was naming, but I don't have it written down because that's a detail that I like completely overlooked.
Yeah, I want to think it's like Tom Horn or something like that.
That's a good catch, though. So, like, with Wydell and with the family, there's definitely like a theme of good versus evil, like that whole trope. And it getting kind of turned on its head with the seeking of revenge. They're sociopaths.
Yeah.
Like, they do have a moral code to them, which is interesting because they do have a sense of loyalty to their family. In the beginning scene, too, I really thought it was, like, there's a kind of a heartfelt moment between Mother Firefly and Baby where she's, like, what did she say? She said, you've always looked like an angel ever since you were born. And then she says, I love you. And I kind of felt bad for Mother Firefly, even though she's like a really nasty character. Like, what's the other character's name? The son that dies.
Is it Rufus?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe, yeah. So he's shot to death in the beginning scene, right. And she stays behind to stay with him as he's dying.
Yeah.
So, like, she has motherly instincts. It's not like she's a complete,
and like... That's what gets her caught by the sheriff, is she doesn't leave the house with Otis and Baby.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she ends up getting taken to the station.
I don't know. As a mother, I can appreciate her dedication to her children. So my next note on here is that, like, Wydell, his obsession, he takes it to, like, extreme lengths to satiate his, like, desire for revenge. Like, he's just as bad, like we already said, like, he's just as bad as the Fireflies. They're just on opposite sides of the law.
Yeah, you hear the sheriff quoting the Bible. He thinks he's righteous, in doing what he's doing.
Yeah, he has some pretty good lines about, like, bringing down the hand of God and all that kind of stuff. And, like, he talks about, like, smiting them, I believe.
Yeah, he gets really brimstone-y when he, mm-hmm. when he's, like, got them tied up, nailing their hands to the chairs and stuff.
You know? Yes. Yeah.
And that's one of those scenes where, you know what you know about these murderer, killer people. And mm-hmm. you kind of feel bad for them getting tortured by this freak, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
In their own home, too, because he takes them back to their house.
Yeah. So he's kind of torturing them in more than one way.
Right.
He wants them to feel just as bad as his victims is what he says.
Yeah.
But I almost feel like he wants even more than that. He wants them to suffer just as much as probably he thinks he suffered from the loss of his brother.
Right.
The Firefly family is like, I kind of see them as agents of chaos. They do and say the most disturbing things to push boundaries, the boundaries of humanity, like what we perceive as okay to, like, there's certain amount of nudity or, like, vulgar language or, like, just the depravity of, like, some of the things that they say is I personally like it because it really pushes those boundaries and makes people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the point of these characters is to push, like, what's too much.
Yeah. I think a great example of that is, like, thinking about the idea that they're on the run.
Mm-hmm.
Their tentative plan was, like, meet Captain Spaulding at the motel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you think about it, like, all they had to do was meet up and then get a plan together and take off somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But because they are who they are, they come across the traveling band, the Banjo Sullivan group mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yeah.
And they decide to make that pit stop an opportunity to murder and torture more people.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, their self-preservation kind of takes a backseat, and they're like, we can have some fun with these people who we just randomly ran into at this hotel.
Yeah. I saw that as kind of their self-preservation too. They wanted a place to hide.
Yeah.
They weren't going to get a room. So, but they don't care who they fuck over. With that family, like, I feel bad for them. They, you know, Otis is really fucked up to them. We've got Baby, who is kind of teasing them, and she's playing a lot of mind games.
Yeah.
And I think one of my favorite parts that one of what Baby does is she leaves the gun out, or one of the girls gets the gun.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And she tries to shoot it, and she's like, do you think I'm stupid? Like, I'm not going to leave that loaded. It's all about head games.
Yeah.
Like, she, and it just shows how thought out and maniacal she is.
Right.
She's not dumb. None of these family members are dumb. They're very thought out in what they're doing. And they're like, I find it impressive in a very scary way. It's impressive.
Yeah. That scene where they're kind of holding them all in their own motel room, and then Brian Posehn shows mm-hmm. up at the door.
Yeah.
And everyone's just being held hostage at this point, and then they're like, oh, you know, another unexpected visitor,
mm-hmm.
Baby sweet talks him, they drag him inside, and in, like, the course of, like, 5 seconds, they're blowing his brains out.
Yeah.
You know, just to, I guess, give an example to mm-hmm. the rest of them that, like, we're serious here, you know, you're gonna die. Like,
and Otis in that scene, like, Otis is super pissed because he asks them, is there anyone else? And they say no. And so he feels like he's being lied to now. And so there's that whole, like, now you're really going to get it because you're fucking with me, don't fuck with me type thing.
Kind of joking him too about how he's like, oh, he's our roadie. I forgot all about him, you know?
Like he doesn't matter. Yeah, and that's a good point about Baby, because she's kind of like the honey trap for everyone. She very much is like...
You definitely see that in House of a Thousand Corpses, you know? Mm-hmm. The way they kind of use her to like separate the two men from the girls, you know?
Yeah.
And then shit just gets worse from there.
Yeah, so. 100%. I love her chaotic energy. She is definitely not a good person, but she's a very strong person. So Otis, as a character, Otis is interesting to me. He plays like he really thinks he's the devil.
Yeah.
When Otis shoots their roadie, and then the husband throws up.
Oh yeah.
I was and like
then he's teasing him about it.
Later. Yeah.
So the throwing up, is that like a thing?
Yeah.
Is she into that? Like,
it's very funny. It's funny because they put a lot of humor. Like Rob Zombie writes a lot of humor into these characters, which you need that to like break up the gruesome like nature of it all.
Right. It's definitely not safe humor by any means, but it's I don't know that it's Rob Zombie's personal humor, but he's obviously writing the dialogue, so you know, he has a sense that like that this is what these characters were like. I think it's worth mentioning too that like Rob Zombie grew up in a family that were circus performers.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
So like when him and his brother were really little, like they saw some kind of messed up stuff.
Oh.
He talked about it on a show he was on once that his parents left the circus after there was like a riot with like the local people and some of the people that worked in the circus, where there was like some trailers got set on fire and people were like fighting, and I think he says something about, you know, I was like 5 years old and I saw this guy just like get hit in the head with a hammer.
Oh, wow. You know? Yeah, and that's like, traumatizing. Yeah, that's going to like fuck
were
just you up. Like,
yep, we're out of this now, you know? No more circus stuff. I think around the time he was starting White Zombie 2, one of the jobs he had was doing the page layouts for like really, really weird porno magazines. And I think he said, you know, not stuff like Playboy or even Hustler or Penthouse, but like weird stuff, you know? Like the weirdest porno mags that you could imagine. And he was doing
stuff that's being sold on the dark web.
Right. And he was like, you know, that was before Photoshop. Like I was literally cutting out pictures and pasting them and then making
He was doing collage
stuff. Yeah.
That's so funny. He was scrapbooking like the worst kind of porn. Yeah. That's great. That's great. But I guess that really does like kind of add some context to his filming style and like the kind of themes that he runs with and why he is so gritty and raw in everything that he shows. He pushes boundaries of horror with like his brutal and disturbing scenes, which are very controversial. I really like in general how he portrays the human body because he doesn't shy away from like odd angles and like lighting that shows every like scar you ever have on your body. Like he's so raw and real about it. It kind of like he shoves reality in your face, which is, I like that.
Yeah. I rewatched the behind the scenes featurette that's probably like from the DVD or whatever. And he talked about how he likes to do violence on screen. And he was like, I think it's important for it to be real, but to not to revel in it. Like, you're not supposed to enjoy it.
Yeah.
You're not like slowing it down so that you can revel in like the violent act that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's just supposed to be off-putting.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not like, I don't see his films as like gore porn.
Right.
Because he doesn't revel in it.
At least not
it happens.
His intent. Yeah.
No, I don't see it as that. Like, it's not like a movie with Saw or like Hostel where they really drag out those scenes and make sure like it's torture for torture's sake. But his is like, this is death. This is what death looks like.
Right.
If you're going to shoot a body, this is what it's going to look like when you shoot a body.
Right.
If you're going to bash someone's head in, this is the kind of blood you're going to see. Like, it's very realistic amount of blood.
Yeah.
Which I think is why it's so disturbing, but also why it is attractive. Like, for me as a horror fan, I just have like a appreciation for him and his ability to actually portray that. That's not easy.
One of the murders that isn't talked about probably a lot in the movie is the one that happens in the opening credits.
I know you're talking about Tiny.
Not the, there is that. There's like Tiny dragging the naked dead girl.
Yeah.
Like to the house or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The film opens cold on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's them waking up to mm-hmm. the sheriff, and then the title sequence and the credits happen after that
mm-hmm.
as they're getting like as they're escaping
and they're
taking Mama Firefly in the police car.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene where they make like a diversion in the road, and like baby's lying in the road and this mom mm-hmm. and they Otis yeah. runs out of the woods and stabs her and they take her car. It's freeze framed a couple of times too, because it's like it'll freeze frame and like show an actor's name on the screen, because mm-hmm. it's still that scene in the movie. I wanted to mention that because that actress that plays the nurse,
mm-hmm.
I don't even know if they credited her in the movie, but she's Mary Warrenoff. She's been in like some B movies in the 70s and 80s and stuff. Like if you're like an underground mm-hmm. horror, like retro B movie fan,
yeah.
you know who like Mary Warrenoff is. She was in Eating Raoul, which is like a kind of a famous like comedic, like kind of black comedy sort of. It's got a lot of murder, but it's definitely like a funny movie.
Okay.
She also played the mom in Terror Vision, which is like a really great cheesy 80s movie.
I'll have to watch those.
That's Rob Zombie being, you know, a fan of horror.
Because
he's got Mary Warrenoff not even credited, just getting murdered in the beginning, and then he's got PJ Souls in the movie too.
Yes.
Who is in Halloween and
mm-hmm.
Rock and Roll High School.
And he has what's his name?
Ken Forey.
Who plays
the uncle.
Right? Yeah.
He was in Dawn of the Dead.
Mm-hmm. And he has what's his name that was in The Hills Have Eyes.
Oh yeah, Michael Berryman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michael Berryman. Like he has a bunch of like cameos that if you are a fan of the horror genre, like, you would recognize these people. And it is really cool because it does show like his in-depth knowledge of the genre. The film confronts issues of violence, corruption, and human capacity for cruelty in a way that like I don't think any other film I've ever seen has, because it's so raw in the way he does it. It makes a lot of people look away and miss the whole point of the characters. Like, I think when people say that they don't like Rob Zombie films, for me, his unflinching portrayal of evil is, it's like it's needed out there somewhere. It should be. And not that you need to watch it all the time and have it be confronted with that all the time, but having it out there, I think, has its significance.
Yeah. I think like going back to what I was saying about what Zombie said himself in that featurette and the behind the scenes stuff is that, you know, he doesn't want the audience to revel in the violence. He's trying to shock. It's trying mm-hmm. to be off-putting.
Yeah.
Because as entertaining as the characters are, like, you're still supposed to come away from it that, like, they're monsters, you know? Like, there's just a question posed in Devil's Rejects that isn't in the previous movie, where having the sheriff be such an awful person kind of makes you go back and forth about, you know, whether you feel sorry for them or not.
Yeah. He definitely gives these characters a backstory with each other. And I think one of the rawest moments was between, like, a family moment was in the car, in the van, when they're going to the House of Ill Repute.
Yeah.
And Otis is driving, and baby wants ice cream. And he's like, you're not going to fucking get ice cream. There's no ice cream in your future.
Right.
But Spalding is like, definitely takes on the role of dad at that point and wants these, the two kids to like shut up and stop arguing. And he's like, we're getting ice cream. And he puts his foot down.
I think the line he says too is very like, it's very dad too. Like he says something like, would it kill you to stop for the kids? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's very
like
something dad.
You'd expect to hear in like a National Lampoon movie. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. And then they, you know, it cuts to the next scene. They've got their ice cream and they're like taunting him. And they keep, and then she like puts the ice cream on his nose. Yeah. It's very much like a brother sister. In that moment, it was very much a brother sister dynamic.
Yeah, I love that scene. And I like the, there's some like, I'm trying to remember when this happens. They show some footage that's like not happening in the present of the movie, where it's like it just looks like home movies
that that's really sad where that actually plays in, because that's like right before, right as they're driving into the blockade.
It cuts to some of those, like it looks like family like Super 8 movies that they shot, and you know that they probably also recorded a lot of heinous shit.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
there's probably a pile of like dead bodies on the other side of the screen.
But
you know,
you get this like little, you know, these little inserts of like what looks like just like little sweet home movies of them laughing and joking with each other about something, you know. And and that it is, it's that scene, right, where they have the sort of last stand.
That part is really good, and it definitely pulls on your like heartstrings. It almost, baby almost looks like an angel, like her mom says in the beginning. And then you're like, oh no, they're going to die.
Yeah.
They're, I don't know how the hell they live. Spoiler, they live. But I don't know, because there's like a shitload of bullets just like raining on them.
And I assume you're talking about like, what, is it Three from Hell?
Yeah.
Because... yeah, I guess because that movie exists, they live, maybe?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
No.
But, you know.
They kind of become almost like a supernatural after.
Right. It's like what happens in all the slasher movies, where, like, the killer's been presumably killed so many times that at some point in the series, you're like... I guess he's not a normal human being.
Yeah. You know? Like, surprise, you can't kill this person.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did want to talk a little bit more about, like, the dark humor. When it came to Captain Spaulding, he's a really funny character. Like, especially when he is stealing the car. And he's like, don't you like clowns? Right. Or
and that's the scene with PJ Souls. Mm-hmm. She's this mom.
Yes.
Got her kid in the car.
Yes. It's very funny.
With mommy a clown.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when he's like, don't you think I'm fucking funny? Or, I don't know. You probably do a better impression.
Oh, and I just love how he's got that grin on his face. Mm-hmm. And then he just, his facial expression just changes so quick to like, you know, did I fucking stutter, bitch? Or whatever. Yeah, he you know, kind of close up on him too. He's so gross looking and like nasty and.
Oh, one more note that I made really quick before I end this. when Otis is about to kill the band members, the two guys, Roy and...
The line about, you know, I want you to pray to your God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, and then he's acting like he's being he's having an exorcism.
Yeah.
Every time he's praying. And it's so funny. Yeah.
You know, the prayer he gives, it's like this old country guy being like, sweet baby Jesus, you know?
Yeah.
it's not very you're calling down the wrath of God or anything.
But he's just like teasing him.
Yeah. And
fucking with him.
He was like, I want the lightning to hit me in the head and strike me down or whatever.
Yeah.
Come on.
Such a good line. And then when he says, I am Satan and I'm here to do Satan's work.
Yeah.
So would you recommend this movie to a friend?
Sure. Yeah. Anybody that's not seen it, I would recommend I'd recommend seeing House of a Thousand Corpses first.
Mm-hmm.
And then seeing Devil's Rejects.
Would you watch this movie with your parents?
I think I've watched it with my dad.
Okay.
But that's different than watching it with my mom. Back when it came out, I'm pretty sure my dad and I watched House of a Thousand Corpses together and Devil's Rejects. My dad just like happens to be a Rob Zombie fan. So he was all about like those first couple Rob Zombie movies coming out. Mm-hmm. And so was I.
It's good to have that kind of family. Well, I want to thank you for joining me and talking about horror. This can be an especially controversial one because of all the things we talked about. I appreciate Rob Zombie and his commitment to brutal cinematography, but it doesn't really call for a repeated viewing, I think, all the time. Like, I wouldn't watch this movie every year.
No. And I'd seen it plenty of times. But it's been a while since the previous last time that I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And watching it again, it was good. But I definitely was like, I remember every beat to this movie. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's pretty burned in my head, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of these scenes are so shocking and you don't see a movie like this very often that it does kind of almost like trauma in your brain. It just kind of sticks with you.
Yeah,
there's definitely moments that make you feel uncomfortable when watching this, but I think it's important and it's one of those things that draws me to the film, that it is pushing those boundaries of right and wrong and what is appropriate or too much.
Right.
So, thank you. All right.
Thank you.
What are you looking at?
I'm looking at you, Mama.
Yeah, you see something you like?
Maybe. I set my standards pretty low, so I'm never disappointed.
Now it's time to get into the true crime of it all. Director Rob Zombie has stated that the film is not based on a specific true story, but rather a collection of elements that create a terrifying fictional narrative. The film's gruesome acts and family dynamic are inspired by notorious criminal groups like the Manson family, which allows for a chilling connection to reality. This is evidenced by a particular line of dialogue uttered by Otis in the film. I am the devil and I'm here to do the devil's work. True crime aficionados may recognize this line, as it's almost exactly what Manson family murderer Charles Tex Watson told his victims in the midst of their mass murder. The Manson family was a cult living in a commune and led by criminal Charles Manson. That was active in California in the late 1960s and early 1970s. The group at its peak consisted of approximately 100 followers, who lived an unconventional lifestyle, frequently using psychoactive drugs. Most were young women from middle-class backgrounds, many of whom were attracted by hippie counterculture and communal living. They were then radicalized by Manson's teachings, The group murdered at least 9 people, though they may have killed as many as 24. Thank you, Rob, for looking into Tom Horn and letting me know he is a real sheriff that did some real bad stuff. I did a little bit of my own research, and now I can tell you guys all about him. Thomas Horn Jr. was an American scout, a cowboy, soldier, range detective, and Pinkerton agent in the 19th century, early 20th century American Old West. He decided to become a rancher with 100 cattle and 26 horses when some rustlers showed up and stole all of his livestock. After that, he developed a violent hatred for thieves and cattle rustlers. He didn't last long at the Pinkerton Agency because it was easier to kill the suspects than to try and bring them to justice. He then began working as a cattle detective and would infiltrate groups of cowboys under an alias. Once he felt he had sufficient enough proof, he would kill them with a long-range rifle. He was eventually hired by the Millers, who were in a range war with their neighbors. A man named Kells Nichols and his 14-year-old son, Willie. Before Thomas Horn got involved, there had been several acts of thievery and violence on both sides. At this point, he was believed to have committed 17 killings as a hired gunman throughout the West. One day, Willie Nichols was wearing his father's hat when he was fixing a gate out front, and he was shot and killed to death. Tom said he was 20 miles away when the shooting happened, but later he unknowingly confessed to a reporter while drinking. Horn was convicted in 1902 for the murder of 14-year-old Willie Nichol near Iron Mountain, Wyoming. On the day before his 43rd birthday, Horn was executed by hanging in Cheyenne, Wyoming. In other true crime news, you might find it hard to believe that there would be a family of murderous assholes passing down their bloodthirsty genes, but I'm here to tell you they did exist. The Bender family, also known as the Bloody Benders for reasons you will soon understand, they were a set of serial killer parents raising a serial killer son and a serial killer daughter. The Bloody Benders are a real-life family whose crimes parallel those of the characters in Devil's Rejects. They were a small, outwardly quiet family who ran an inn on the outskirts of Cherryvale. The people of Cherryvale and the Benders' visitors regarded the family warily, since they seemed to have an oddness about them. John Bender Sir and his wife Elvira, I'm sure that's a coincidence, kept to themselves most of the time and barely spoke English, preferring their native tongue of German. But their children, John Bender Jr. and his sister Kate, were more sociable. John Jr. and Kate were often spotted in Sunday school at the local church and were the ones to charm the visitors upon first arrival at the inn, which set the guests at ease. Like the Firefly Clan in The Devil's Rejects, their true crime counterparts, Bloody Benders, had dual personalities, and their sinister dynamic worked underneath their happy exterior of family togetherness and entrepreneurship. When select guests would join the family for dinner, they would take the seat of honor that was situated in front of a curtain which divided the living space and the dining area. The guest of honor would be graced with a delightful presence of Kate and her lively conversation. Meanwhile, John Jr. and John Sr. would sneak up behind them with a hammer, striking the visitor on the head until they were dead. A trapdoor, which was expertly placed underneath the feet of the guest, would then open and their body would be whisked downstairs to the basement, to later be dismembered and buried in a shallow grave in their family orchard soon after. The guests that were murdered were not even rich or had anything valuable on them. So it is highly likely that the Bender family, like the Fireflies, killed for the sheer thrill and love of it. The Bloody Benders mysteriously disappeared, and their fate is still unknown to this day. Now, let's end on a high note. If you are working on anything horror-related and would like to collaborate on something, I would love the opportunity to connect with more people in the horror scene. I'm also thinking about making mini episodes, but I'm not sure where to take that quite yet. You can reach me on any of my social media accounts. My Instagram is Scream Queen Trivia, and my Facebook is Jenica Dear-Olin. I also have a Blue Sky account under the handle Scream Queen Podcast. As the holidays killdoze their way through December, let's put a little horror in the holidays. My next three episodes will be on The Black Christmas by Bob Clark and the remix that came after. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Also, sharing is caring, and I need to be taken care of, so please share away and thank you. This is officially a weekly podcast. Please be patient with me as I'm learning all of the technical audio stuff as I go. I am getting better, I believe. I'm preemptively cringing at all the mistakes I've made thus far. Thank you for listening, and don't be such a dick that you make the bad guys look like the good guys. I feel like that can apply to many situations. Until next time, goodbye.